Join Fareed Kamani on his journey into the tech startup world. The Back to Fronty podcast, available on Capital FM SoundCloud.
My name is Nyesha Mtsekwa. I am the regional executive for Adapt IT, a South African business that headquartered in South Africa, but we run the office here in East Africa.
Okay, now we met recently and started talking about the murky world of content and OTT and VOD platforms. And as you know, I'm doing Fronty, which is a brainchild of mine and John's, and actually the wider Adenian team, including Bendon and Irene. And we have our unique selling points. But when we started talking, Yasha, we had a discussion about, actually, John said we should chat, John Kamara.
Yeah.
CEO and founder of Adenian Labs, because you've been down this path before.
Yes, I have.
And what struck me is how early you saw a gap in the market. Take me through that journey and what brought you to the place where you thought, wait a second, streaming is the way to go.
Well, so firstly, I'm from Zimbabwe, right? And had been living in South Africa for quite a bit. Zimbabwe, like Kenya back in the late 90s, 2000s, had one TV channel, ZBC, Zimbabwe Broadcast Corporation, just like you have KBC or what was Voice of Kenya. And what struck me 2006, 2007 was we hadn't moved on in Zimbabwe. We had one TV channel, right? Just oppose that to South Africa, where you know there was SABC 1, 2, and 3, ETV, and then the plethora of DSTV channels. And so the question was, how do you get more content to more people? And you know, we went through many ideas around that. But one of the things that it struck was a free-to-air satellite.
So this is way before the Netflix and the Amazon.
Way before that.
And any of these VOD platforms came in. But technically what you were creating without probably knowing then was a VOD platform.
Yes, yes, yes. Look, when we used to pitch to investors to say, you know, we're the YouTube, but a walled garden, right? So you actually have to log in. You actually have to create credentials. And there was some level of subscription coming in play. So it was early days of VOD. Most of the content, especially that was available on the mobile networks, was basically where we've gone back to with TikTok. You know, 1 to 2 minute videos, and you were able to access them via USSD. And it wasn't a platform. The value-added service providers were making a killing out of that. So we kind of wanted to be that like middles. And that's literally how we were thinking about it. You want to be like YouTube, but you want to be a value-added subscriber, and you want to be like in that middle. So, I mean, there was no Netflix to benchmark yourself against.
Right.
Yeah.
So this short-form content and obviously longer-form content, you know, pre-TikTok, because I remember these videos. You dial star, whatever.
Yes,
video of a comedian or a music video, whatever the case may be. All of this was leading up to a much bigger thing, which is obviously social media content and now VOD content. But this was in 2000 and?
It was 2008.
Right. So take me through the infrastructural element of what you were trying to do. How were people going to access this YouTube, quote unquote, clone that you were creating?
Well, that was the biggest issue, right? Back then, I think a packet of data was worth more than gold.
Right.
We had a couple of models, right? First, we thought about the free-to-air video experience, which basically was a DSTV-like scenario, but you're able to choose the content that you want. So for people that have the premium DSTV, the way you're able to do movies on demand, that technology is actually very, very old. And so we actually looked at saying, okay, how do you build a pay-per-view platform? And the costs were astronomical, right? Because there's the satellite costs going up and down. There's the cost to acquire a customer. So the customer has to buy a satellite dish. They have to buy a decoder and the thing just escalates. So we then went and said, okay, how do we do it if we just do a something online, right? And we really clone kind of that YouTube model, but create the content and help creators actually build, you know, viewership on their own platform. And so that was the journey. In it started off looking at, you know, the current infrastructure, which was satellite TV, and seeing how you could have a different model from that. And then actually just going back and saying, look, what do we have and what do we have access to? And we can only build on the internet.
You created essentially a channel that was going to run content in an ideal world. Fresh content every day, 24 hours a day, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But obviously the challenges come in filling those hours.
It's filling those hours. It's user engagement. It's ownership, really, about, you know, how the content lives on that platform versus, you know, a, you know, kind of, you know, that couch potato scenario where you just sit in front of your TV and just content gets streamed at you, right? How do you create that, like, you know, engagement, and that's what, I mean, the platform was called MeTV Africa, and it was basically saying, you choose. So you, because we're building on the internet, we are able to give you more than one internet stream at a time.
Right, so this is where the on-demand
This is where on-demand comes in. And so now you've got this capability where, you know, we are all, there's 10 of us, we're all on this platform, and we're watching different things.
And you can choose whatever you want to watch. You can stop and switch to something else.
And stuff like that.
And that was limited by technology at the time. But technically what it was a precursor to what we have now, which is content whenever we want, however we want, on whatever device we want, etc., etc. Did you know what you were, what you were about to kind of maybe do? I mean, were you aware of... Could you see, I mean, you're a tech guy, and tech people generally are quite visionary in the sense that you will see, okay, I'm limited today, but in 2 years from now, this will open up and I'll be able to do A, B, C, and D, I'm sure. Were you aware in 2009 that by 2015 or 2016, the idea you had was going to be monetized in the hundreds of billions of dollars?
Look, I'm before a tech person, I'm a natural optimist. The answer was, I thought this was going to be like the billion-dollar thing. Right?
But I think it was. I think you were on track, because I don't think Netflix, in their, you know, delivering DVDs to people's houses, had thought along those lines at that point. 2009 is a long time ago.
It was a long time ago. Look, there was conversations about how video... So a lot of people were looking at the YouTube model and saying, what is that doing to TV watching?
And how do we then create our own?
Yes, and then how do we create our own? So there was a lot of conversation around that, but it was very community-based. So people were looking at it from a, you know, there's this type of community and I want to serve this type of community.
Right.
Because even Heroku came up around 2010, 2011,
correct,
right?
Correct.
So, but there was a focus on a community. It was, how do I give a certain community the YouTube experience because they miss it?
And make it relevant to that community.
And make it relevant to that community.
Yeah.
So even in our understanding, right, we were looking at Zimbabwe and saying, well, let me call it the wider Southern Africa, because Zambia was the same situation, Namibia, Botswana was the same situation. There was no TV content available besides what the national broadcaster is.
So almost bored out of desperation, really,
yes,
right?
Yeah. So there was that community. That was the USP, if you want to call it that. So did we think we could scale to $1 billion? I don't know. I know that, like, I thought, you know, that early on, I thought I could own Southern Africa.
Right, and be the guy.
And be the guy.
And again, you're saying these conversations were being had, but it wasn't like they're being had now.
No.
So you technically were ahead of the game in 2009.
Yes, to a large extent, large extent. And also, you think that the content people who were supposed to be the champions of, I want to make my content available, I want to earn from it, would have been our greatest supporters, but they were actually, like, they didn't understand it and they weren't interested in participating right. in this.
Would they have been able to monetize on that content?
Yes.
And how would that have worked?
We were trying to get into a scenario where we would pay per view.
Okay, right.
So yeah. So you would get some level of cost or cash back for every view that happened. So we had that model, and then we said, okay, we'll also follow the YouTube model where if an advertiser advertises on your thing, you get directly compensated for that.
Right.
So, I mean, it was well thought of.
If you flash forward to 2022 and we talk about Fronti is actually doing something quite similar, but now we have the benefit of 13 years of technology. And we're going to get into Fronti in a minute because the insights you gave me when we first started speaking were incredible, and it's got me thinking on a whole different level. Before that, though, you have to tell me and the audience the London Olympics story, because this is this to me, because I mean, I feel like you would be untouchable for me to do this podcast if that had gone the right way.
Of course.
You know what I mean?
I would have many, many, many houses, and many guards, many PAs.
And many podcasts.
And many podcasts.
For a select few, you know, not a DJ from Nairobi. So what happened with the London Olympics? Because you had, before we, I'll do a precursor for that from my understanding. Early days of your MeTV platform, you signed a deal with the London Olympics. To broadcast their content.
Yeah.
Now, I'm certain you were already picking houses, cars, and places to live, because I think that would have been, I made it, that's it, I'm done. Once I crack this, everyone's gonna wanna be on my platform. What happened?
So the London Olympics has a, what they call their distribution arm for content. So there's the guys who are in charge of the content and basically doling out this distribution to the different national broadcasters and pay-per-view, right? And so we approached them, said to them, listen, we are this new business. We know how to, number one, geo-lock the content. So if you say to us, we cannot show the content in these five areas, we can do that. And we did it successfully. We can give you the numbers in terms of who's viewed, who's not, da da da, how long, da da da. And nice thing about it is we'll broadcast to mobile, right?
So before people were even thinking about watching full sports or any kind of magazine programming on their mobile, you were thinking, we're going to give people the option to log in from their device.
Yeah.
Smartphones were relatively new in the market at the time.
Yes.
Tablets were basically unheard of.
Yeah. Well, no, I know. You had the very. I mean, I think you're an iPad, the iOS 4, maybe 3 or 4.
But not everyone had one. No, right? Like they do now.
Yeah.
And you were telling London Olympics, whoever you were dealing with, there's going to be people, and I guess all over the world in that respect, once they figure out who you are, they can watch the Olympics anywhere, anytime, providing they have data or a Wi-Fi connection.
Yeah. And okay. we said we're going to partner with all the telcos on the continent and give us the rights. And they said, look, no one has approached us for the rights for mobile for Africa. However, we SuperSport, when they buy everything.
Mm-hmm.
And they've bought everything for South Africa. So if you can promise us that you're not going to do any of the South African viewership. You can actually use this content and let's see.
Right? Right.
So we spent a good 2 to 3 weeks trying to lock in some advertisers, lock in mobile operators to basically pump this message out to their people to say, listen guys, this content is going to be available for you to watch.
I mean, look, if I saw that, if you told me that as a consumer of content and someone who owned a smart device and could sit in an office with Wi-Fi, I would be like, yeah, I'm in.
True.
I'm in. I'll just watch it whenever I want.
Yeah.
You know, and whatever discipline of sport I want, it's all there for me. But it didn't work. I still can't understand why.
Let's say this. It didn't work commercially.
Okay.
So we were able to stream, and we streamed.
So infrastructurally, you were there.
Infrastructurally, we did what we said we were going to do.
Right, but commercially, right. you didn't get the numbers.
Commercially, we didn't get the numbers, and therefore we didn't make the revenue. Right. So commercially, the conversation and getting them to agree took too long. One, two, we didn't sell the proposition to the MNOs fast enough for them to actually create marketing plans around it, and and therefore we were going to these to the MNOs really last minute.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I think maybe like a week or two before it started.
So there just wasn't enough of a ramp up.
To get a critical mass. But between Nigeria, Kenya, and between Nigeria and Kenya, we got about 100,000 views throughout that period.
What was the target views? What was your?
I wanted 1 million.
Okay, right? So you were at 10%.
Yeah, I got to 10%, and it just didn't work.
Right.
And look, if we had the funding we were trying to raise and weren't able to, we would have been fine, because we would have said this didn't work, but the technology works
and the potential is there.
The potential is there, and we could have done 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 extra things.
Right.
But we were by the time the London Olympics came, we had been burning through savings and all these things. This was like the last ditch. This was if this thing works, we're out of here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If it doesn't work, we're out of here.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Either way, you're gonna have to leave your house, right?
Either way, you're a small order or a big one.
So it didn't work. What I love about your energy, Nyasha, because this is my first foray into the tech world. You know my story. In the previous podcast, John and I spoke about the fact that I was just filming their content around Africa.
Mm.
And John and I just struck up a friendship. And you know, I'm a sponge. I started learning and going back to my hotel room at night and Googling things they were talking about, because I had no idea what an MVP was or what beta testing is or any of this, you know. To be able to have a conversation about tech, you need to have a little bit of a background knowledge.
Yeah.
But what I love about your energy is that because, I mean, in essence, a lot of people would have said, okay, that's it for me in tech. You know what I mean? Here you are, 13 years down the road from this, or 12 years down the road from this really massive obstacle or speed bump in your journey.
Failure,
okay, I didn't want to say failure, but failure, fine. And yet you, as you said, you're a serial optimist. You know, for the young guys out there that are getting into the tech world, and the older guys like myself, what is your piece of advice in terms of, hey, if you fail at your first one, it doesn't mean it's over?
Well, look, I think there's a couple of things, right? I think that part of the journey, right, is learning yourself, right? So there's many things throughout that journey that I learned about myself. And some of those things I call upon continuously. And when I call upon them, I'm like, oh, wow, I didn't know I had that.
In the pocket.
Like, I've got this in my pocket and pop, 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 and it's actually working for me. And then I'm like, whoa, that was actually, you know, I often joke that, you know, I don't have a master's degree, but I always say, like, that was my master's, my PhD, and my double PhD in 18 months of, you know, hard slog. Because, you know, from the time we had the idea to about 2011 is when I left my job, right? And actually said, right, I'm doing this full time. And then did it for like 18 months, right? And culminated in failure.
Right.
But that 18 months was as good as any PhD.
But there must have been low moments after that.
No, there were tons. I mean, look, personally, I mean, it affected my family quite a bit, right? Not quite a bit, a lot, right? And just recovering from that was a long road. And part of, I think, what today's young or old entrepreneur, especially on this continent, needs to understand is that the journey is long, right? Mm-hmm. And it's not necessarily about how you get through the tough times, right? It's more about how you celebrate those to get you through the good times. Because what, you know, and I like to think about this in more in perspective than anything else is, you know, when things are going good, you've got the capability to make them better. Mm-hmm. Because you know you're on a good wicket. You've hit a six, you hit another one, and you're like...
Spoken like a true Zim.
And then you're not going to like try block the next one, right? You're going to like try go for
always,
it again.
Always, home because, run after home run. Yeah, because
now you've understood where you are.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so, and to do that though, you need to actually have the low moment.
Yes. And we're going to, and again, I experienced in the last 4 years a number of low moments personally, financially.
Yes.
In terms of business, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And then this opportunity arises. And I am dealing with this very different than anything I dealt with before,
yes,
based on those learnings from the last 4 years. Now, I want to get into Fronti because this is obviously about, the podcast is called Back to Fronti.
Mm-hmm.
And it's taking me back to my journey of the last 22 years of being a content creator and film producer and TV mm-hmm. producer across Africa. And born out of the idea that we're not paid enough. Mm-hmm. Netflix will spend between $5,000 and $90,000 on a Nigerian film, which is, I'm sorry, it's bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't, I mean, that is just embarrassing.
Mm-hmm.
They're pumping billions into other parts of the world.
Yeah.
For my energy and my creativity and my heart, you can't give me $5,000, I'm worth more,
yeah,
says every African filmmaker.
Mm-hmm.
Fronti is an OTT VOD platform. You know the basics of it. It's gonna happen. So I'm not giving away too much yet because it's not built. But I am now exploring, after doing extensive research, putting Fronti on the blockchain, where space will no longer be an issue.
Yes.
Because if you put your film on the blockchain as Nyash, you've already got that space, and you'll just give me access you'll give me access to that file, smart contracts, etc. Is the blockchain, you're in a fintech space right now with Move Better, is the blockchain the future of all technology? Because everything I read is, it's just, I mean, the pace of which things are moving into this space, I didn't know what the blockchain was 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
I now know in a very rudimentary way what it is and what you can accomplish through it. Is that where everything is moving?
There's two levels to it, right? And we must understand that tech in itself is part fad, part realistic. Right, so there is a lot of fandom that's going with the blockchain, especially around the crypto side of things. Is there an actual use case for this technology? And the answer is yes. Right now, the question is always going to be: could you do it better, faster, quicker using, you know, in inverted commas, old tech?
Yeah.
And the answer is sometimes yes, sometimes doing it on the blockchain actually gives you quite a lot of things right at the same time that you don't necessarily get with old tech,
mm-hmm.
right? So, you know, I know the Kenyans love their Subarus and their old Land Rovers and all of this kind of stuff. And people like, you know, look at the new stuff and say like, that new stuff is rubbish.
Plastic.
It's plastic, right? But then the new stuff is going to give you all of the good stuff right at the get-go. If you go into like a proper Land Rover enthusiast's car, he's got the GPS there, he's got a camera thing there, he's got, you know, all the like ticket, and he's brought those things all together into the Land Rover to make it like today.
Right.
But if you went to the shop floor and bought a Land Rover, all that stuff comes standard.
Right.
So that's the difference.
Ah, I see. I see the analogy.
Yeah. So that's the difference that you get with blockchain, right? And I think people are seeing that and wanting that,
right?
And I think for Fronti, I think that's a brilliant thing because, you know, 80%, and this is not by any research, it's nyasharesearch.com, right? 80% of creators' issues are around contracting.
100%.
So copywriting, how they copyright, how the copyright is used, how they earn money from that copyright. And if you can make it smart,
yeah,
you actually take away a lot of the headaches, because I'm sure you attest to this, creators aren't lawyers.
No, we're not organized people. We are literally creators.
Yeah.
Someone else has to run the office.
Yeah. And I mean, if we take the example of the MSK issue with Saudi Soul and Azimio just now, in that they don't know what rights have been given, right?
Mm.
They just know that MSK handles their rights. So they can call out and say, oh, well, our rights given, you know, like they're always reacting.
Yeah, that system is the old Land Rover.
Yeah, that's the old Land Rover, because you always are reacting to whatever's happening new, right? But imagine in the real sense that all I needed to do was get onto some platform and say, I want these rights for this piece of content,
mm-hmm.
and I'm paying $5 for it. And then not only are the people involved doing the approval in real time, but they're also getting paid in real time.
Mm.
And that creates that, you know, that
and,
real...
And that's what I envisioned before I thought about the blockchain being our home as Fronty, was that producers are going to be paid in real time, even if we go with the old method. But this makes it a quicker thing as well.
Mm.
The other area that we have recently discovered or started talking about is, we're going to accept cryptocurrency as a form of payment. And as a producer, you can also accept cryptocurrency or real cash, as many people call it.
Mm-hmm.
There's also an opportunity for Fronty to become a currency.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, true. Because it's an ecosystem, right? You have a writer, you got a director, you got a producer, right? How do they come together in, you know, inverted commas again, the old ways? Right? What is Fronty going to do to create that ecosystem that allows trust, right, amongst those people? Trust in a way that allows them to create the content in a distributed manner, right? So does your writer have to be in Kenya where you are? Does your producer have to be? Can the director direct and get actors and etc. etc. out in Zimbabwe, whilst, you know, the producer and, you know, owner of the content is here? Is it possible to do? And I think the ecosystem should allow that, because at the end of the day, most creators, producers, writers, actors are actually gig workers, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's what we are. Yeah, yeah. We basically get paid per hour or per word. You know what I mean? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, you know, the pain of traditional banking for creators is part of the reason why they're poor,
mm-hmm.
right?
Right.
And it's, you know, do work now and get paid later, because, you know, it's just too expensive for us to pay you every single time you work.
Yes.
Right. So, you know, how does the crypto world, you know, deal with that? And we've seen many, many gig platforms actually start working in that environment, so it makes sense.
And like Blow, for example, is another, you know, from the music side, is almost, you know, a mirror of what Fronty is anyway, right?
Yeah,
we're just doing it from a content side.
Mm.
Interestingly, you've mentioned the old way of banking, and that's probably why producers are poor, and also being paid much later for what you provide in terms of a service in my industry, film or television or any kind of audiovisual content.
Mm.
What Fronty is looking to address is, yes, we're going to ask for producers to give us content that they already have shot, edited, and own at a very high quality level, but the remuneration system is so high.
Mm.
And again, I can't really get into the hows and whys of that yet. But all that will do is, I'll give you an example. If a Nigerian filmmaker gives us his film and manages to get 500,000 views, that film will make over $1.3 million. He will get $875,000 of that $1.3 million, right? That's unheard of on this continent, okay?
Yeah.
My thinking, and I would bet dollars to donuts in the American terminology, he gets his $875,000, what's he gonna do? Probably buy a house, maybe a car, so make sure his kids' school fees are sorted, and then take his $650,000, whatever's remaining, and make a better film. Eventually, I'll have created an ecosystem where these films will be coming to me based on the money that my platform is generating for the producer.
Yes, yes.
And then all of a sudden, this ecosystem you talk about, because that's a big term in the tech world, becomes the Fronty ecosystem.
Yeah.
We need to create in Africa a place for African content creators. But there's another side to it, Yash, which I have just started toying with and had a conversation with some Indian investors last week. There's a massive desire for Bollywood on this continent. And we don't get the films as they come out in Bollywood. So your Bollywood filmmaker has made a, I don't know, $20 million film, because those are the budgets now, right? Africa has millions of Asians that are any diaspora audience gagging for that content.
Yeah.
I will allow that Bollywood filmmaker to show his movies in the theater, stream on another platform in the Indian market, and then bring it here. And again, he can make an extra $1 million on his film. So there's all these little elements that can come into it. I would then, because we're gonna close this now, and you've been like the best guest. You tried this in 2009 without technology. With a very low success probability for yourself, even though you almost cracked it, man.
Almost cracked it.
Yeah. What do you think is the need in terms of content creation in Africa now? And where has it failed when you look at Viusasa, Safaricom Base, and all these other platforms? Those are the last two questions. I want to get your take on those.
Well, I think there's a couple of things. I think, you know, if I go back to what I spoke about, you know, YouTube and what people were looking at then was that community trying to address content for a community. I think the need is greater now. I think what we find with the likes of, you know, like the top tier ones, Netflix, Disney, and all the guys that are coming in, and then, you know, the local Showmax, Viusasa, and all these things, is that when you're trying to spread yourself thin, right, and be everything to everybody, you need a lot of money. And it's not necessary, because people have choice, right? And the choice is it's humongous.
Oh, right? I mean, you can get anything from anywhere.
Yeah. That people, you know, will log into this platform for this period because there's something specific that they want to watch. And the question is really, you know, that you need to be asking yourself up front is, how do I answer that question? Instead of trying to answer, can I be everything for everyone?
Right.
And to a large extent, you know, we learned that, you know, when we were trying to do the content game and the London Olympics came along, we were like, hey, wait a minute, there's actually a gap in sport on mobile.
Right. And to a degree, even now.
Even now.
Yeah.
Right. And that conversation led us into trying to crack that market, and literally was the pivot, I think, that would have made the difference, right? If it had been successful commercially.
I think our goal as Fronty is to, A, create a safe space for content, where you don't have these as a Mio things happening, and someone taking it, which the blockchain will be the solution. The other thing is to let influencers put their content on our platform and earn money from that as well. And obviously reality shows with influencers involved as well. That's a sort of phase two. Our biggest USP is obviously the immersive cinematic experience, which I'll get into in another podcast, because it's still a little hush-hush for now. But man, first of all, you're an inspiring gentleman. I really appreciate the time you took today. And I know you're going to be a big part of our success, because, you know, you have to have someone on your team who's failed trying to do the same thing. You know what I mean?
No, for sure. Happy to have been part of this, and, you know, continue to be part of the growth, and, you know, let's build Fronty.
Awesome, Matt. Thanks, Nash.
Cheers.
The Back to Fronty podcast, available on Capital FM SoundCloud.